अन्तर्गृहा गता कश्चित् गोप्यो लब्धा विनिर्गमा कृष्णं तद्भवना युक्ता तद्युर्मिलिता लोचना. Some of the gopis, however, could not manage to get out of their houses, and instead they remained home with eyes closed, meditating upon him in pure love. For those gopis who could not go to see Krishna, intolerable separation from their beloved caused an intense agony that burned away all impious karma. By meditating upon him, they realized his embrace, and the ecstasy they then felt exhausted their material piety. Although Lord Krishna is the Supreme Soul, these girls simply thought of him as their male lover and associated with him in that intimate mood. Thus their karmic bondage was nullified and they abandoned their gross material bodies. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments upon this verse as follows. Here, Shukadev Goswami speaks in a peculiar way. He presents the intimate object the gopis attained as if it were an external idea, thus keeping its nature secret from outsiders, while at the same time he reveals to the confidential devotees, well versed in the scientific conclusions of devotional service, the internal meaning that is his real purport. Thus, to outsiders, Shukadev says that Krishna gave the gopis liberation. But to the confidential hearers, Shukadev reveals that when the gopis experienced separation from their beloved, there arose in them both immeasurable unhappiness and immeasurable happiness, and that they gradually achieved their desired goal. Thus the verse can be understood as follows. Because of their intolerable separation from their beloved, the gopis felt terrible agony by which they caused all inauspicious things to tremble. In other words, when people in general hear of the gopis' extreme agony and separation from their beloved, they abandon thousands of inauspicious things. Things even as fearsome as the subterranean fires of millions of universes, or as powerful as poison swallowed by Lord Shiva. More specifically, those who hear of the gopis' love and sexual separation give up their terrible false ego, thinking themselves defeated, are shaken. When the gopis meditated on Lord Achyuta, he became manifest and personally came to them, and they experienced great joy by embracing his body, which was full of transcendental love for them. The gopis also experienced great joy by exhibiting personal characteristics and a sense of identification appropriate to such love. That joy made all their good fortune, both material and spiritual, seem paltry in comparison. Om Agyan Tamitandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurum Militham Jenathasmoy Sri Gurudev Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakathamayam Jatati Shvapatantikam. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashri Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare
Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram.
Yesterday, we had discussed these beautiful verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which describe the gopis' utter surrender to the will of Sri Krishna. How these topmost of all fortunate souls did not consider anything important in their lives save and except to satisfy Krishna. When Krishna played his celebrated flute under the Bamsiba tree, the gopis, they received this message through the beautiful flute. Krishna wants me to come now. Whatever they were doing, it didn't matter anymore. We are so much attached to this material world. We are so bitterly attached to family life. We are so bitterly attached to comforts, to security, to fame, to reputation. But to follow in the footsteps of the gopis means to internally abandon all such attachments utterly. This is Vrindavan. And there's no other way to Vrindavan except through that detachment. Some of the gopis, they were cooking milk for their families. When Krishna calls, they didn't even have time to take the milk off the stove. They just left, and the milk boiled over. Some of them were breastfeeding their infant children. And you know a mother's love for their infant child. The gopis simply removed their breasts from the child's mouth, set the child down, and left it for Krishna. Some were milking the cows. And in the middle of this milking, not even considering taking the bucket from under the cow's body, they just left it to meet with Krishna. Others were cooking cakes in the oven. Did they have time to take the cakes out of the oven? They left it to burn because Krishna was calling. They were not thinking, let me finish my worldly responsibilities, then I will answer the call of Krishna. When Krishna calls, there is no priority left in one's life. That is the mood of the gopis. Some of them were taking their evening meals with their families. And when the flute entered into their hearts, they simply pranam and left. Some of them were personally feeding their fathers, their brothers, or their husbands, depending on whether they were married or not. When Krishna's call came into their lives, they just left their duties without consideration of the consequences. And some of them, they were putting on their cosmetics to look nice for Krishna. But they could not even concentrate on that. It is explained that some put the upper part of their clothes on the bottom part of their bodies, and the bottom part of their clothes on the upper part of their bodies, and they left home for Krishna. And it is explained by Shukadeva Goswami, the topmost of all sannyasis, that their husbands, fathers, brothers, and other relatives tried as far as their capacity to stop them. But Krishna had already stolen their hearts. Enchanted by the sound of his flute, they refused to turn back. This is the standard of real renunciation. Because the gopis knew that Krishna is the life and soul of all living beings. Krishna knew, the gopis knew that Krishna is the root of everything that exists. And if Krishna is satisfied, then all of our other responsibilities in this world are perfected. Bhagavatam explains, Devarshi bhutapti ninam pitrinam na kinkari nayam nanicha rajan sarvatmana yasharanam sharanyam gato mukundam parititya karatam. That all your obligations to the demigods, all your obligations to your forefathers, all obligations to the king, to all of your relatives, every obligation in this entire creation is perfectly fulfilled when you surrender to Mukunda. Why? Because actually, he's the only one you have any obligation to anyway. Everyone's existence is only by his mercy. Whatever we have, whatever the demigods are giving us, Krishna says, is coming from him. Whatever our mothers, our fathers, our children, our wives, whatever they are giving us is only by his mercy. He is the source of everything. Sarva karana karanam. He is the cause of all causes. This is Bhagavatam philosophy. To surrender utterly to the will of Krishna. And to have faith that if Krishna is satisfied, everyone will benefit. Can you imagine the gopis' surrender? They were young girls. And the Shastra says that the emotional needs for every woman is for protection. Just like every father who's trying to marry their girl, they know, oh, there must be a good income of the future husband, there must be very nice security for my daughter. Otherwise she will not be happy. You know how we worry like this. That is the nature of every woman. They need that type of security. But the gopis, they knew that if they leave the house, they will never be allowed to come back. And they were leaving in the middle of the night. And each gopi was thinking, Krishna is calling only me. She wasn't thinking that I'll be with so many other gopis. She was leaving alone in the middle of the night to enter into the jungle. And obviously they knew that they weren't going to live with Krishna forever. Krishna had to go back. Krishna would go back to Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj the next morning because he would secretly sneak out. They didn't even know he was gone. But their families knew. So they would give Krishna some enjoyment for a few minutes, and then Krishna would go home, and where would they leave? They would be without a father, without a husband, without a home, without food, without any shelter, without any protection. They would be cast alone in the jungle, but they didn't mind. If giving Krishna a few seconds of enjoyment, if that's what the way I have to spend the rest of my life, I'll do it. Without hesitation. But the greatest sacrifice was, we know, a chaste woman. Her chastity is more dear than her very life. Her whole reputation and the internal self-worth of her life is dependent on her chastity. You know how Draupadi, how much she was threatened when Dushasana was trying to derobe her in front of the Kauravas. For a chaste woman to be seen as unchaste, or to understand oneself to be unchaste, is worse than death. You know what it's like. The gopis, by leaving their homes, they were subjecting themselves to complete condemnation by the entire society as being unchaste, unfaithful. They were giving up the highest virtue of womanhood, chastity. What a sacrifice. But they did not hesitate, because their lives were simply for Krishna's pleasure. The gopis were willing to go to hell for eternity just to relieve Krishna from a few minutes of a headache. They were willing to abandon everything for Krishna. This is the culmination of Srimad Bhagavatam's philosophy. Through the first 9 cantos of Bhagavat Purana, we read about the total surrender of such great devotees as Prahlad and Dhruva and Ambarish and Gajendra. But it culminates in the pure, unmotivated, unalloyed surrender of the gopis of Brajbhumi to follow in the footsteps of the gopis is the teaching of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya taught that the supreme emblem of devotion is this spirit of the total attachment of the gopis to Krishna. Of course, we cannot imitate, but the spirit we must imbibe by becoming the servant of the servant of the servant of those who are adopting the pure mood of the gopis of Vrindavan. Rupa Goswami has said, surrender to Krishna. Do not fear. If you surrender to Krishna, everything else will be included. But do we have this faith? Are we able to take certain material risks in surrendering to Krishna? If we are, that means we have some faith, and Krishna will test our faith. No pain, no gain. The test of faith is when Krishna makes your devotional service contingent on taking certain risks and possibly losing things that are very dear to us for His sake. Rupa Goswami says, you'll never be the loser if you surrender to Krishna. Do we have that faith? Or do we hesitate and we hold back? Or we make excuses and justify? The fact is, Krishna is the controller of all controllers. If we surrender to Krishna, He will take care of everything the most perfect way. If we try to take care of things ourselves, it will be imperfect, because we are imperfect. And will we really not do much good for anyone? But if we leave it, if we surrender to Krishna and do our duty according to Krishna's direction, then Krishna takes care of everything and everyone. Look at Prahlad. This is a preliminary example to the gopis. Prahlad surrendered to Krishna, and because he did that, Krishna even took care of his father and gave him liberation. Do we have this faith? Prahlad had that faith that the best thing I could do for my father, my mother, my brothers, my everybody is surrender to Krishna. This is Bhagavad philosophy. Here we find that Krishna, by his inconceivable and mysterious mercy, tests his devotees in so many ways. The fortunate gopis, they simply abandoned everything and everyone and went to meet Krishna. And ultimately, although it was against all odds, they all were welcomed back home as if they never left the next morning. They didn't know that that would happen. They passed the test and then Krishna just gave everything back to them. They had that faith. They took the risk, and then Krishna, both on the material level as well as the spiritual level, he gave them everything. But they showed their love. That's how we show our love. But it is explained here that some of the gopis, they escaped. Although every one of them was strongly forbid to do so. But others were forced to stay home. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that some of their fathers, their brothers, or their husbands with sticks simply would not allow, physically would not allow them to leave the house. And these gopis, they simply felt themselves that Krishna, I cannot be with you to satisfy you, to please you. It is beyond my control. So therefore, they internally just withdrew their consciousness to the core of their hearts and remembered the beautiful form of Krishna. And serve them to their heart's content in that way. But at the same time, it was such a burning agony and suffering that they could not go to see their beloved Krishna. It is described in these verses by Shukadeva Goswami that that intense pain of suffering burned away all of their previous karma. Now we may think, how is it that the gopis had any previous karma? But it is explained by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and the previous acharyas that there were different categories of gopis. By the way, we are all worshipping here Radha Gopinath. That means he is our Lord. He is the Lord of the gopis. And he is our Lord. So he is expecting us to follow in the footsteps of the gopis. And then he is truly our Gopinath. So it is explained that many of the gopis were Nitya Siddhas. Some of them were direct expansions of Srimati Radharani. Some of them were Jivatmas, who were purely liberated souls, who descended from Goloka Vrindavan simply to assist Lord Sri Krishna in his wonderful, wonderful pastimes. And some of them were Sadhan Siddhas. They were Jivatmas who were conditioned by forgetfulness, but who by association with saintly persons and performing sadhana had purified their lives. And amongst these there are many categories. For instance, the scriptures explained that the personified Vedas, in their next birth, they became gopis. And it is also explained that in Naimasharanya, when Lord Sri Ramchandra was traveling, there was a whole group of great, great sages who were actually devotees of Krishna. And when they saw Lord Ram, the thought of the vision of Ram just awakened this mood of conjugal love in their hearts. But they did not say anything to Ram because they were embarrassed that Ram has made a vow to only have one wife. But we want to serve him. They did not want to enjoy him. They wanted to serve him in this intimate way of a lover. So Lord Sri Ramchandra could understand this innermost desire that they were cherishing in their hearts. And he blessed them by telling them in his next incarnation of Krishna, they will become gopis. And it is described that some of these gopis, they were born into the families of the Brijbasis, and from their early, early childhood, due to their association with other gopis as being friends who were nitya siddhas, who were very, very highly evolved, transcendental lovers of Krishna, by that satsang, that purified mood of gopi bhav began to develop in their hearts. And although they were so intimately elevated in spiritual consciousness, still there were some traces of previous karma in their hearts. And Krishna wanted to purify any tiny little remnants of material conditioning from their heart. And for those gopis, he would not allow them to come to the Ras dance. He kept them home by the arrangement of their fathers or husbands. And it is explained here that the pain that these gopis experienced cannot be understood even by the farthest reaches of our imagination. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in this purport that we have so wonderfully read today that even swallowing the powerful poison of Lord Shiva, when they turned the ocean of milk, this poison was so deadly that it was about to destroy the entire creation. Even the pain of swallowing that poison was insignificant compared to the suffering the gopis had to undergo. But that suffering externally was internally a form of great ecstasy. And it shows that when Krishna wants to further purify his devotee, oftentimes he puts him in a condition of suffering. And in that condition of suffering, following in the footsteps of the gopis, those devotees just withdraw their hearts from everything else and completely take shelter of Krishna within the core of their minds. And in that intensified thought of Sri Krishna, they were completely purified. They became perfect Braj gopis. Srila Prabhupada explains that when a sadhan siddha becomes a pure devotee in this world, before he's allowed to go to Goloka Vrindavan, first he goes to a Gokul Vrindavan. He goes to a universe that Krishna is enacting his eternal leela, and he takes part in Krishna's leela in a material world first, to get properly trained by the eternal associates who descend with him. And also, if there are any last traces of karma, Krishna personally arranges one way or other to just burn them out Just like you know how Lord Chaitanya in Chaitanya Charitamrita was very fond of very pure, highly polished, fresh white rice. It's described how much he would glorify the taste of fine rice when it was offered as prasad. But rice, when it comes from the ground, it has a husk. That husk is not digestible. It is not offerable to Krishna. The rice within is pure, and Krishna is longing for it by his mercy. But as long as that husk is there, we cannot put it on the altar. How to remove that husk? By beating it. We see in villages, sometimes women with big sticks, they're just as hard as they can, they're just beating the rice. They're beating it and beating it and beating it. And when they beat it and beat it and beat it, the husks gradually just get pulverized and turn into powder and just fall away. And some more technological villages that have more higher understanding of material science, they just put their rice on the road so that all the trucks run over it. And when the trucks run over it, the trucks are very heavy. They're, you know, especially in India, they overload these trucks beyond imagination. Huge, gigantic burdens of on this the truck. It's just coming out on all sides. Tons and tons of weight with all these heavy wheels. They come crushing the husk from the rice. And in the West, they have machines where these gigantic gears just start grinding the rice and just the husk is devastated. So there are different processes. But the goal is to somehow or other release the pure rice from this husk. Then it is offerable to Krishna. And Krishna, he knows what we want, and he also knows what we need. And when we are devotees, even to the level of the gopis of Vrindavan, if we are sadhana bhaktas, Krishna knows what it takes to take that husk of false ego and material attachment away from us. Because until we become completely detached from the husk of material desire and ego, we are not truly offerable to Krishna. So Krishna tests us in many ways. And sometimes he may put us through emotional, mental, or physical suffering. Just like yesterday, one of our very beloved and wonderful God sisters, we saw her laying in hospital. How she's suffering for so many years. And we may ask, why does a devotee have to go through this? Because Krishna wants her to be a perfect offering of love at his lotus feet. He wants to bring her and all others back to Goloka Vrindavan. But in order to do that, whatever remnants of that husk of material attachment is left in our lives have to be removed. And sometimes it is through this turmoil of crisis and suffering that it takes place. But while it's happening, a devotee is grateful. Tathena kampam sushamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vibhagam haridvagbhavur vir vidatam namaste jivetaya mukti pade sadaya bhak. This is perhaps Prabhupada's favorite verse. In almost every book of all of his literatures, he quotes this. It's so important to understand that one who in the face of great suffering is able to gratefully thank Krishna with folded palms and remember him, that person alone is eligible for liberation. And when we're put into terrible suffering, what should be our consciousness? I'm fortunate. Krishna is giving me an opportunity to be eligible for liberation. He's giving me the blessed fortune in this condition to gratefully offer my obeisances to him. And if I can do that, I will be liberated. The gopis who were held back, it was all by the arrangement of Krishna. And in their great, great turmoil of separation, in their apparent suffering, they were purified utterly. And Krishna, from within their very hearts, embraced them. It is described here. After they went through the terrible turmoil of separation, as they became completely purified, even at home, they were eligible to enter into the Rasalila. Because Krishna, within their hearts, was dancing with them and embracing them. There is no material impediments to Krishna consciousness. The only impediment is our unwillingness to surrender, to reciprocate with Krishna's desire. The only singular impediment to our spiritual development is our attachment to our own independent ideas. Even Srila Prabhupada, when he was on his what we call a deathbed, he couldn't move, he could hardly speak. His body was finished, exhausted. But still, he was immersed in Krishna. And even in that condition, he was inspiring devotees all over the world to surrender to him. For a devotee, there is no such thing as a material impediment. Because for a devotee, the more the material impediments come into our life, the more we take shelter of Krishna, and the more we actually advance in devotional service. If we are true, if we are faithful, if we make Krishna the number one priority of our life, and until we come to the stage of that complete abandonment of material attachments for the sake of reciprocating with the desire of Krishna, we cannot understand what is Rasalila. It is all an imagination. Therefore, we must hear the story of the Rasalila in this way. We must understand the dignity and the depth of the utter surrender of the gopis of Vrindavan. This is preliminary to the gopis' meeting with Krishna. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost of all transcendental literatures. Amalam Puranam. It is the only literature of the Vedas. It is the only scripture, besides those great scriptures, which are the commentaries of the Bhagavatam in the form of the Chaitanya Lila biographies. that deal with unmotivated, uninterrupted loving service to the Lord without any tinge of Artha Kama Dhamma Moksha. To approach the Srimad Bhagavatam and to approach the beautiful mood of Krishna in his loving dealings with the Brijvasis, we must submissively be the servant of the servant of the person Bhagavats. Those who are truly and genuinely giving their lives to teach by their example and their words how to surrender to Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there any questions? Yes, Raghunath.
Krishna is seated in everybody's heart and is fulfilling the desires of everybody. We also understand that it's not only desire, it's also deserved. Which means that even if you desire something, unless you deserve it, Krishna will not fulfill that desire. So on one hand we are saying that we have the independence to desire. On the other hand, the desire is fulfilled only when we deserve it. And that deserved part comes by the mercy of Krishna. So really, what is our independence to desire? Because ultimately we are going to get only what Krishna wants us to get.
But do you know what it means by deserve? Deserve means how much you're willing to sacrifice for that desire. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati used to say, first deserve, then desire. In other words, we may desire, but how much are we willing to sacrifice for that desire? It's not a material calculation. It's a question of your willingness. To the degree you're willing to make sacrifices to fulfill that desire, to that degree you deserve. It's very tangible, very practical to understand. That's what Krishna sees. He sees your desire, but he sees how true that desire is by how much you're willing to give up for that desire. Like the gopis. The fact is, the Ras Lila is the highest expression of conjugal love. There is Santa Ras, more intense reciprocation with Krishna is Dasya Ras. Higher than that is Sakya Ras. More intimate and inclusive than that is Vatsalya Ras. And then we come to the paramount of all relationships with Krishna, Madhurya Ras. And in the Madhurya Ras, the Ras Lila is the culmination. Now, even though the gopis were such pure and celebrated personalities, even the Nitya Siddha gopis, they desired to please Krishna by dancing with him. But Krishna would not allow them into the Ras Mandala until they deserved. And how did they deserve? By showing their willingness to sacrifice anything to fulfill Krishna's desire. To enter into that highest lila was not an easy thing. They had to first undergo the most terrible and difficult form of surrender, sacrifice, and detachment in the entire world. They sacrificed their security, they sacrificed their families, they sacrificed their reputation, they sacrificed everything of this world completely. They had to show their willingness to do that before Krishna would allow them into the rasa dance. That is how they deserved. But then, after they did, Krishna gave everything back to them. as if they never even run out. That is Krishna's wonderful mercy to his devotees. And similarly in our own life, we may desire to be Krishna conscious, but we know what Guru's instruction is, and we know what the Shastra says in the previous acharyas. How much are we willing to sacrifice of our own self, of our own ego, of our own attachment, of our own security? How much for the purpose of reciprocating with Krishna? First deserve, then desire. Make that sacrifice. Otherwise, what is our desire? It is a pseudo-desire. This is what Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati and all the previous acharyas have taught. And the gopis were the most pristine and perfect examples of this. To the extent that Uddhava, who was the most intimate friend of Krishna in Dwaraka, do you know? A little. And he only discusses certain things with us. But Uddhava, he's with constantly practically. He discusses everything with Uddhava. Think of this. Krishna was in Dwarka for such a long period of time, constantly in the association of Uddhava. Uddhava was personally with Krishna. They would embrace each other. They would hold each other's hands. They would lay on beds together. They would sit together. They would dine together. Meanwhile, the gopis, they were hundreds and hundreds of miles away, and they hadn't seen Krishna for decades. No association personally, physically. They were simply weeping and crying, longing for the moment they could even have a glimpse of Krishna. And Uddhava was seeing him day and night. But when Uddhava went to Vrindavan, and he saw the nature of the love of the gopis, he considered that he had no love for Krishna in comparison. And therefore, when he went back to Dwaraka, he prayed to Krishna that I want, if you want to give me a benediction, please give me this blessing. Let me become a blade of grass in Braj Bhumi so that the gopis may step on me with their lotus feet, so that the dust of their feet will be on my head. I couldn't take it while I was in Vrindavan because I would have embarrassed them. So let me be so fortunate to be a blade of grass. And if I'm not qualified to receive the dust of the feet of the gopis, then if one of the associates, near or distant associates of the gopis, step on my head with their lotus feet, that will be the perfection of all my desires. And do you know something? Even Uddhava, who was so advanced and so intimate with Krishna, so exalted in Dwarka, Krishna would not easily give him that position. Krishna told Uddhava, that exalted position is so much that you have to go to Braj Bhumi and do tapasya for a long time to attain that dignity of relationship by becoming a blade of grass. And there is a place on the Govardhan Parikram called Uddhava Kund, where Uddhavaji, he performed severe tapasya, simply intensely praying for the benediction of being a blade of grass in Vrindavan. And the culmination was near Kusum Srovar. He took his birth as a blade of grass. So that the gopis and their friends could step on his head with their lotus feet. This is the position of the gopis of Vrindavan. Any other questions?
We hear when Krishna sucked the life air out of Putana, she was also purified and she was also liberated. That's how the smell was very aromatic. And here the gopis who were separated, they also felt pain. And the devotees also feel pain. Now, both have this, But what is the difference between the pain for purification in case of Putana and that of the gopis? Does the perception of pain makes the difference, making you purer?
Putana received the causeless mercy of Krishna. Somehow or other, she approached Krishna as a mother. Although she had demoniac intent, she still approached Krishna as a mother to give the milk from her breast. So Krishna sees everything. Krishna is the complete whole, and he sees the whole of everything. He sees, here comes this Mataji, who is approaching me as a mother to give me milk. And actually in her previous life, Putana was a relative of Bali Maharaj, who was born in a family of demons. And she was actually a demon family from the demon race, but from the race of Prahlad, so she was a very pious, devoted demon. So anyways, when this, you know, Vamanadeva was just like a little child. He was just a very beautiful, sweet little dwarf. He was so nice that when he came to the sacrificial arena and begged Bali Maharaj, this sister of Bali just fell in, she was a lady. She just had such motherly affection for this child. She just wanted to love the child as a mother and just give her her milk. She actually developed love for him. But then, when she saw Vamanadeva transform into Trivikram, very powerful, universal form of God, taking steps that were covering the entire universe, and she saw that he totally cheated Bali, then she felt inimical toward him. So the mixture of these two desires, first she wanted to offer her motherly love, and then she felt inimical. So Krishna said, all right, you have two things in your heart. First you have maternal affection, then you have inimical, so I'll give you a birth where you can do both. You can be Putana, Harivo. You can be inimical toward me, and at the same time you can be like a mother to me. And Putana came, and Krishna saw that there's two, that one is good and one is bad. I'll never disturb the good. I'll just remove the bad, so that's the only thing left. But to remove the bad, there has to be the husk and the rice. The maternal affection was like the rice. The inimicalness was, the desire to kill Krishna was like the husk. So Krishna sucked. And he sucked very, his mouth was very tiny, but such incredible vacuum pressure was there. He sucked so hard. It was so painful. She was a terrible, powerful demoness, 8 miles long. Can you imagine to suck the life air out of a life, out of a demon 8 miles long? He sucked. And as he was sucking, there was so much pain that she was screaming, she was running, she was just completely in disarray. She was being tortured, and ultimately tortured to death. But in the process of that pain and suffering, all of her evil intentions were removed, and what remained? Her desire to be the mother of Krishna. And therefore she was sent to Goloka Vrindavan to be one of the nurses who assist Yashoda Mai in caring for Lord Krishna. So that was Krishna's causeless mercy. Again, Krishna is so perfect and complete in everything he does, that whether you're a gopi or whether you're a putana, Krishna knows exactly how to purify you and send you back to Godhood. Or whether you are a Ananda Vrindavan or Raghunath or Radha Gopinath, or whether you're a
Radhanath Swami, Krishna knows exactly what we need to purify our hearts. Have you ever seen a philharmonic symphony of classical music? There may be hundreds and hundreds of different players of instruments. There's the violin section, then there's the cello section, then there's the kettle drum section, then there's the trumpet section, and the clarinet section, and the trombone section. Huh? And so many sections. The xylophone section. And they're all together, and the conductor's just standing there with his stick, and he's just pointing like this, and then all the violins go doo 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 doo, and then he goes like that, and the trumpets start going and then he goes like this, and the kettle drums start going boom boom boom, huh? And this way he's just orchestrating everything to bring everything to a whole, to make the symphony. Krishna is like the conductor. And material nature, everything and everybody is in his orchestra. The demons are in his, there's the demon section. And then there's the devotee section. Huh? And then there's the Mataji section. And then there's the Brahmachari section, right? There's all sections. And then there's the section of the rains and the winds and the hurricanes and the tornadoes and the sunlight and the temperature, everything. And for a devotee, Krishna orchestrates the entire material existence just to purify one devotee, every devotee. So Krishna sees you, and he knows what you need, and he knows what you want, and he just orchestrates everything around that. Make this temperature, this disease, this have this devotee say something bad to you. He just goes, dude, he just points to this devotee and he says to you, you're a rascal. And then he takes his conductor wand and he points to another materialistic person, and they come up and say, why don't you just take this nice sense gratification? Then he points to points his wand to some little germ in your body, and all of a sudden you become sick, right? The fact is, this entire creation is Krishna's orchestra, and he is conducting everything minutely for his devotee. And it's all meant to bring about the purification of our consciousness. There's no other reason anything happens to a devotee but that Krishna's special mercy to purify us. Nothing happens by accident. Nothing for a devotee is just karma. It may be our past karma, but if Krishna just points his wand toward the karma and says, go away, it goes away. But if he says, all right, karma, this is what, it's good that he lives out his karma. And then our karma comes. Nothing happens by chance. So whether we're putana, or whether we're sadhana bhaktis, whatever level we are, Krishna's arranging everything for our purification.
But how we react to it, does it make a difference again?
Makes all the difference in the world. If you react with a grateful heart and reciprocate with Krishna's desire, under whatever circumstance comes into our life, we become purified. We get his infinite mercy. But if we fight against it, if we complain, if we act disobedient to the will of our guru and the Vaishnavas in that situation, then we simply lose the opportunity. Like Krishna
points to the clarinet section and he deliberately plays the wrong note. That means he loses the chance to be in harmony with Krishna's mercy. Yes?
All these gopis, those who went to the Raslila, if we see the Bhagavatam, we find that most of the gopis were grahasthas. And most of the gopis were having children, they were having their husbands, their in-laws, and all of them. And it has been said in material life that those women who are getting married, they are more attached to the house and the wives, means wives are more attached to the house and children rather than any other things. Now, staying into grahastha life, having all sorts of avenues of attachments, yet these gopis, they just ran away from there and just went to Krishna. Now, if we see the gopi standard of such a high renunciation, even the param sannyasis also, they could not reach to the level which the gopis have reached it. Although being in grahastha life, not in a sannyas level or something, although they were a grahasthas, yet they have reached to that level, even a sannyasis also could not reach. So what is the secret of it, that although being in a grahastha life, they have reached to that level, rather than the sannyasis or other people?
Adivo. The secret is that they surrender their will to Krishna. Grihe thako, vane thako, sada hari bole thako. Krishna doesn't care whether we're grihasthas or sannyasis. He is only concerned with, in whatever situation we're in, how much we are attached to his loving service. So whatever our particular ashram may be, we have particular duties to perform. We cannot imitate the gopis. That would be sahajya. For you to just leave your wife and enter into the forest looking for Krishna would be sahajya. Huh? You have to follow the instructions of your spiritual master, who is the representative of Krishna, how to be a proper grihastha, how to have strong sadhana, how to always be serving the sadhus, how to always be putting Guru and Krishna's instruction first and foremost as a team in your lives, how to live a pure life and gradually advance in Krishna consciousness, and how to always be aspiring for detachment even in our own relationship from anything except the will of Krishna. That is the instruction. That is the will of God to you. That is following in the footstep of the gopis. And if we are sannyasis, we have our particular duties. Just like of the gopis, the two principal associates of Srimati Radharani were Lalita and Vishakha. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, Lalita became Swarup Damodar, who was a sannyasi, and Vishakha was a grihastha named Ramananda Rai. Who's better? Can any of us dare to compare the two? They were both perfectly surrendered to the will of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu according to their ashram. They were both perfect. And they're both leading the proper example that we should follow according to our particular status in society. One more question, Vishwarup Prabhu.
You said that Krishna orchestrates everything perfectly in devotees' lives and gives them sufferings and gives them whatever they require for spiritual upliftment. So where does our prayer stand in this way? If Krishna is planning to purify a certain devotee by giving him extreme pain, and if another devotee is praying for him that Krishna be kind to him, so is it in contrary to Krishna's desire of giving him pain, or what is it?
Krishna takes everything into consideration. When we are praying for someone's benefit, no doubt if our prayer is pure, that prayer will go for the benefit of that person. Undoubtedly. Exactly how it benefits that person, Krishna knows how it will best. That prayer may alleviate the physical pain if Krishna feels that that prayer will best serve that person in that way. But that prayer may also just attract Krishna just to pay closer and closer attention to that devotee's spiritual progress.
One who is praying or one who is suffering?
Both. The one that's suffering is going to get further blessings of Krishna if the Vaishnavas are praying that Krishna gives her special or him special blessings. The intensity of his mercy upon that person will very much be enhanced and increased by the prayers of the devotees. And the person that's praying also gets immense benefit. It's because he's sacrificing his own consciousness in the mood of being the servant of another Vaishnava. Prayers never go in vain for either the person who is praying or the person who is being prayed for.